Let's see if Mike Florio can help us with that. Brought to you by JP Roofing, your hometown roofing expert.
Boris Badenoff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
He's on it.
And Natasha.
Nah, everyone knows Natasha.
Moose and Squirrel. Moose and Squirrel. That's all I remember from that show.
More than we did.
Hey, Mike.
Well, I'm old. I grew up in the time of Bullwinkle. You guys grew up in the time of Rugrats.
Hold on. I might actually have to get Donnie to clip that. I grew up in the time of Bullwinkle.
What an era. Yeah. The anyway, me decade was the 70s. Listen, how about the Bullwinkle decade?
Let me just, for anybody out there who's of my vintage, Saturday mornings were like sacred territory because that was the only time you got to see cartoons. That was it. So it was with great excitement that you sprang out of bed on Saturday morning to go downstairs because you couldn't just turn on the Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon or...
Now you're speaking my now you're speaking my language, Mike. Yeah, so, I mean, Pony and I are both getting very close to 40. I am a little closer than he is, but I remember two things: Saturday morning cartoons, and then when you got home from school, you only had like a 2 hour window to catch Spider-Man or X-Men, and then that was it, man. And people don't kids these days. As I get up onto my soapbox and scream at them to get off my lawn. Kids these days don't understand how tough it was to catch the cartoons back in the day.
And how about
and
a cereal?
Everywhere you go.
Did you have a cereal of choice for the Saturday mornings? Did you have a cereal of choice, Mike?
Lucky Charms.
Ooh.
Extra lucky. Now, everywhere you see parents with kids, they've got them watching cartoons on their phone, and they don't have earphones for them.
Mm.
So anyone out there listening, I beg you, when you're in a public place with your kid, get them earphones. Nobody wants to hear that in a public place.
We have, our older one is 5 and a half, and he does watch his little tablet sometimes, but he's got the headphones hooked up to it, Mike, so we are way ahead of you. We're very considerate parents in that regard.
Mike, I have here a quote from Kenny Pickett's personal quarterback's coach saying today on NJ.com, so I think the Newark Star-Ledger's website, that... he feels, Pickett's quarterback's coach, that the Steelers basically pushed a false narrative about him after the trade, that this was orchestrated by the Steelers to try to make Kenny Pickett look bad to defend moving on from him. If this is true, how damning is that statement about the Steelers that they would do that in a way of making the Pickett trade look better?
How do I put this as gently as possible? Did the Steelers need to make him look bad? Did he need any help to look bad? Did we see nothing from him in 2 years that would make us say, wow, there's a keeper? You know, Bill Walsh always used to say if he would see a quarterback do one special thing a single time, he'd figure out how to get him to do it all the time. What did Kenny Pickett ever do that makes you say, wow, we need to harness that and do it all the time? He did nothing special. It was all meat and potatoes, simple, basic stuff. So I get why they did it. And it had to be bad for the Steelers to admit failure of a first-round pick at the quarterback position and throw him overboard after 2 years. I don't think he needs any help as it relates to narratives that make him look bad. He made himself look bad in the 2 years he had to show that he could be an NFL quarterback at a high level.
I don't really buy what his private coach is saying here, Mike, in part because there was no indication from the Steelers publicly that they were unhappy with him. Omar Khan even like gave him sort of a vote of confidence still before this all went down. It would absolutely, and by the way, just the few things I've heard behind the scenes all tells the opposite story, that he really was unhappy with it. This sounds more like quiet late June damage control attempts than anything to me. I don't know about you.
No, I agree with you. Look, Kenny Pickett pays this guy. So maybe that's all I needed to say in response to the last question. Kenny Pickett pays this guy. He's got a vested interest in making Kenny look good. So he's going to push back against anything that might make him look bad.
How about Kabali's writing this week, Steelers Insider, that the Steelers would like to sign Justin Fields to an extension before the season, but they would not give him, they would scoff, they would balk at a Jordan Love type extension. And Chris and I were talking about this earlier in the show. Like, how do you thread that needle then? You think that, I don't think Justin Fields would take a Jacoby Brissett deal or a Sam Darnold deal, Mike. I don't see them finding the middle ground of getting something done before the season. I wouldn't want to get something done before the season with Fields because I'd want to see how it plays out with Russell Wilson first. Your thoughts?
Guys, I think it would have to have triggers that would pay him this year, next year, the following year, based on how much he plays, how well he plays. And for that, hey, you know what? I'll just become a free agent next year. That's the thing. Justin Fields has the ultimate leverage here. I'm not signing anything. My contract expires after this year. You could have picked up my fifth-year option. Obviously, you weren't going to do it. I'm a free agent in March. I'll hit the open market, and we'll see who wants to give me a chance to be their starting quarterback. Because, you know, this is Wilson versus Fields. It's like, and I may have said this here last week, it's Costanza versus Lloyd Braun for the water pick. One of them's going to win it. And if Fields doesn't win it, he'll go somewhere else and try to win it there.
Mike, how much did Fields' reputation around the league, in your opinion, or to your knowledge, suffer just with how things went in Chicago for him in terms of lack of overall results? Like, would he be in demand as a free agent, you think, to be somebody's starter if he just left the Steelers after 1 year?
It depends on what the other options are. And we've evolved to a point in free agency where every year there are more than a few veteran quarterbacks with starting experience available to be signed. It's amazing. It wasn't that way for a long time. And now it's that way every year. There's a lot of potential free agents next year who are, wow, hey, this could be a good quarterback. I think Fields wasn't at whatever his ceiling is yet. You've got a dysfunctional team traditionally, but for 1985, you've got a guy who had developed quickly into the most dangerous running option at quarterback in the NFL. And before Chris Sims had a chance to take a close look at Caleb Williams' film, and Sims and I had a chance to sit down and talk to him for 15 minutes at the scouting combine, our position was you keep Fields, you trade that first overall pick, you draft a lot more help, and you give Fields another season to maybe become the guy that he can be. So I just don't think he's had the full and fair opportunity. And we see this all the time. It happened to Geno Smith. It happens to other quarterbacks. You get a limited window to prove yourself. And if you don't, you're out. Look at Kenny Pickett. Maybe Kenny Pickett can develop into a great starter. Where's he going to get the reps? Where's he going to get the chances? So I think with Fields, we still don't know. And that's the good news for the Steelers. You may find out while he's a member of the Steelers, and you may keep him, and he could become – I mean, if you really are rooting between the two guys, no disrespect to Russell Wilson, I want the younger guy
Correct.
To become the starter because we'll keep him for 10 or 15 years in Pittsburgh.
Exactly.